Let's start learning Parshat Vayera. And Perek Vav, actually Parshat Vayera start with Pasuk Bet. Interestingly enough, if you all know the division of the chapters, the way we have it and the way Chazal had it, sometimes differ a little bit. And in this Parsha, it's actually quite dramatic, as we are going to see in a second. But what we read in the beginning of our parsha is that Hashem revealed himself to Moshe, and he tells him the following. I met the forefathers with the name of El Shaddai, and my name God, Yudkei Vavkei, lo nodati lahem. And he tells Moshe Rabbeinu basically, let's go to Pasuk Hey, וגם אני שמעתי את נעקד בני ישראל אשר מצרים מעבידים אותם, ואזכור את בריתי. I listened to the suffering, to the yelling, to the screaming of Bnei Israel after the hard work that Mitzrayim oppressed them. And I remember my brit with the brit ben Abetarim. Remember that everything was actually going according to the plan that Hashem already told Abraham Avinu in brit ben Abetarim. Now it's a time of turning the point of Avadum ve'inu otam. And now it's time to leave the exile of Mitzrayim and to go back to Eretz Israel. And therefore, he tells Moshe Rabbeinu to go and to tell the great news to Bnei Israel. He's going, we all know the Arba Leshonot Shel Geula. והוצאתי אתכם מתחת צבלות מצרים, והצלתי אתכם, וגאלתי אתכם, ולקחתי אתכם. The Leshonot that actually we repeat on El Seder, the Arba Kosot are based on these four Leshonot of Geula. And what happened? Vayidaber Moshe ken el bnei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu, I guess it's like a teacher coming to the class and he had a great idea and you want to inspire the students. And Moshe Rabbeinu is going to Bnei Israel and is sure that they are going to clap and to admire the great news. Ve'lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach u'me'avodah kasha. It's like flat, falling flat. No one is listening. No one is excited. Lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach u'me'avodah kasha. The psukim afterwards, of Perek Vav. Let's go here. Moshe continued to talk to Hashem, and when Hashem tells him to go to Paro Melech Mitzrayim, Moshe repeat actually the complaint that he had for a long time, and he say, Bnei Israel, the people actually that I come to tell that they are going to leave Mitzrayim, they don't want to listen. You expect Paro in the power to listen to me? Of course he's not. And Chachamim said this is one of ten kal vachomer that we have in the Torah. Bnei Israel were supposed to listen to him, and they didn't. How much more so, Paro is not going to listen to him. And nevertheless, the Torah is telling us, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aaron, Vayitzavem el Bnei Israel. He tells them to go nevertheless, ve'el Paro melech Mitzrayim, and they had the mission, Lotzi el Bnei Israel me'eretz Mitzrayim. And here comes a very interesting parasha that seems to have nothing to do with the story itself. The Torah here gives us a list of Bnei Israel in Mitzrayim. If you read Perek Vav, Pasuk Yudalet, the 14th verse, the Torah is telling us about Bnei Reuven, Ele Rashei Beit Avotam, Bnei Reuven, Bechor Israel, and a list of the children of Reuben. And then Bnei Shimon, the second tribe, Yemuel, Yamin, Yoad, Yachin, Tzohar, all the names of the children of Shimon. And the third one, Ve'ele Shmot Bnei Levi Letoldotam, Kershon, Ukeat, Umerari, we have a list of Bnei Levi. Not only that, if you read carefully the list of Bnei Levi, you are going to see that it's much more detailed than Reuven and Shimon. And Reuven and Shimon, we find, for example, the names of the children. You don't have the grandchildren. When you come to Levi, you have already the grandchildren, Bnei Kiat Amram, and then the Torah said, Bnei Merari, Machli Umushi. This is already the third generation. And then a whole story about the family of Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayikach Amram et Yocheved Odato, the first time that we know who are these people. Amram took Yocheved, Vateled lo et Aaron ve'et Moshe, and their children, Aaron and Moshe. Then we have even Bnei Yitzhar, the cousins, one of them very famous later, Korach, and not for the right reason, by the way, Korach ve'Nefeg ve'Zichri, ובני עוזיאל, מישאל ואלצפן וסיטרי. We get here a whole list of the family of Levi. Not only that, actually we have some biography of the important people in the tribe of Levi. ויקח אהרון את אלישבע. I think she's the second woman mentioned in this list. The first one on this list. The first one was Yocheved, now we have Elisheva. אחות נחשון. In the family of Levi, we are talking already about the fourth and the fifth generation. We have the children of Korach in Pasuk Chavdale, Bnei Korach Asir Belkana Be'avi Asaf, Ele Mishpachot HaKorachim. And another couple, Elazar Ben Aaron, Lakach Lo Mibnot Putiel Lo Leisha. We are not going to talk about the topic of Bnot Putiel. According to Chazali, they are the daughter of Yitro, but right now it's not important. There is a machloket actually who was Putiel. But certainly this list, number one, have nothing to do with the story itself. The story has to go like Moshe got a mission, Moshe and Aaron got a mission, they go to Paro, they are successful, they are not successful, they are going to Bnei Israel, they are successful, they are not successful. But why here? Not before they leave Mitzrayim. Why here you have this list? Question number one. And you know what? Since we learn together, I don't want just to lecture. I would like to ask more than that. We all might understand that it's important to talk about the Yichus, the dynasty of Moshe and Aaron. They are going to play a major role in their redemption from Mitzrayim. But then the question will be, okay, so why Reuven and Shimon? Question number two, actually. Isn't it enough just to talk about the Yichus of the tribe of Levi, who actually going to focus and to highlight Moshe and Aaron? They are the heroes of this story. So why at all we need to know about Reuven and Shimon? It doesn't serve anything. This is number one. Actually, the second question. Now, you see, actually, it's not a full list. What we have here is a list that ends the moment you finish to talk about the tribe of Levi. What about Zvulun? What about Issachar? What about Yehuda? Nothing. Why? If you bring part of the list, why you don't bring the entire list? If you don't bring the entire list and you, for some reason, want to highlight Moshe and Aaron, don't talk about Reuven and Shimon. So this is another question. So number one, what does it serve in this story? Number two, why do we have to know about Reuven and Shimon? But I have a greater question than that for everyone who listened to the Parsha last week, to the Parsha of Shmot. Let's read carefully again the story unfolding in Pasuk Chaf. Vayikach Amram et Yocheved dodato lo leisha. Amram took Yocheved, which was his aunt, the wife, and she gave birth to Aharon, who indeed was older than Moshe, ve'et Moshe, u'shnei chayei Amram sheva u'shloshim u'me'at shana. First of all, who's missing here? Let me just open my screen of the Zoom.
Miriam.
Miriam. First of all, Miriam is not here. Number two, I would say this story is a little bit too normal. What happened to the story of Moshe Rabbeinu growing in the house of Paro, back Paro? If you read this list, you know nothing about the rich, dramatic, unbelievable history of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Torah seems not to pay any attention to these details. It looks so normal. Amram took Yocheved. He had Aaron, who indeed did not have an extraordinary life until this point. He grew up in a normal family, so to speak. But Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah, like, omit the whole story, like, take it away, the whole story about Bat Paro, the fact that he was growing in Mitzrayim, in the palace of Paro. What happened to it? So if anyone have some thought about the three or actually four questions that I present, I would love to hear. It's a late hour. I don't want anybody to fall asleep, you know.
I once learned from Rabbi David Silber that people lose their names as soon as the slavery begins.
Right.
That's one sign of slavery, that you lose your individuality and your humanity. And now that the Geula is beginning, that one sign of it is that the names are beginning to return.
I think it's a very, very important idea, because indeed, if you want to understand what happened in Perek Aleph, we start the Eile Shemot Bnei Israel. I always tell my students, you know, when do you say the Shemot? For in the graduation, you mention every person's name. It's important. This is a special event, and you want everyone to get the recognition. And what happened later is something that our grandparents and some of us, our parents, they lost their names. They turned to be numbers. And this is a way to destroy a person
identity.
And you are absolutely right. And now, if the Geula start again, we introduce again the names of the people. This is a beautiful idea. Thank you for bringing it. I think it's a very valid one. Although it will help us to understand why indeed the Torah put this list here with the names, but again, some questions are still there. Why Reuben and Shimon, number one? Why not the rest? Why so many details about the family of Levi, even including the numbers, like how old was Moshe Rabbeinu, how old was Aaron, how old was Levi when he passed away? So there is unusual detail, not only about the names, but about the family itself, the marriage and so on and so on. And as I said, it looks like the Torah hides completely in this perek the fantastic story or history of Moshe Rabbeinu himself. It seems like everything was normal in his childhood, and nothing about the extraordinary events that the Torah itself made sure that we will know in Perek Aleph and Perek Bet.
But there it would give him legitimacy. It would connect him to the Jewish people, which the people might not see.
I see.
Here it's trying to connect him to Am Yisrael, to situate him within the Am.
That's a beautiful idea, and I'm going to actually elaborate over this one. I think it's a very, very important one.
Aren't there parallels between Moses and King David? Moses, who brought the Torah, is born of a relationship that couldn't happen after the Torah, because his father, a man can't marry his aunt. A man can marry his niece, but not his aunt. So he's born of a relationship that wouldn't be allowed by Torah law. And David has also questionable origins.
It's very, very true. It's very nice. And actually, we all have very questionable origins, because, you know, that Yaakov married two sisters. I hope that Rabbi Kelman will arrange in the Parsha of Emor, when we learn about the Arayot. I think this is a very worthy topic to discuss. And your comment is very, very true. There are many connections. Actually, David HaMelech himself put in the Bible and in the healing that he wrote to parallel himself to Moshe Rabbeinu. But again, this is not the topic of this shiur, and I will have to focus on this year. But they are very good comments.
In answer to your question about why they spent so much time saying the amount of years and the lineage, it's because the ancestors are around for a long time while the children and the grandchildren are living. So we have their influence in the family, whereas perhaps, I don't know the numbers of Reuven and Shimon, but maybe they were not around as much to influence the next generation. So throughout slavery, you have this influence on the potential leaders of the redemption.
I think this is a very insightful comment. I'm not sure about Reuven and Shimon, but certainly I'm pretty sure that the Torah want to highlight the idea of the value of family in the survival of Bnei Israel in Mitzrayim. You know, I don't want to draw parallels, but we do know that societies, that the family structure is dysfunctional. You cannot survive for a long time. Certainly, you cannot transmit values. You cannot actually develop a culture. And I think that the Torah here wants to tell us that with everything that happened in the previous chapters, Bnei Israel somehow managed to keep their identity, their values, their masoret from the avot, because the family or the families played a major role in the structure of the nation. So this is highly, highly important, because we do know that if you want to ruin a society, the first thing you do, you ruin the family structure. And a lot of what's going on around us is focusing on the idea of family and the healthy family. And I think that the Torah here want to tell us a secret, that people who manage to keep the family structure, they have a much better chance to survive and to be redeemed, rather than a society that lose this basic structure of family. So this is a very insightful comment, and thank you for this. What I want to do is to put this chapter in context. As I already said, Perek Vav comes after Perek Hey, and because we have like a week between the two, we sometimes forget what happened before. So let's go, please, to the end of Perek Hey. Let's remember what did we read at the end of last week's parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to Paro, and the story with Paro does not end very well. Paro get very, very upset, and in order to increase the oppression, he give the gzeira of Teben. From now on, not only that you will have to work hard, you will have even to collect for yourself the stray, the Teben, the cash, the straws, in order to fulfill your task. But this time it's going to be two times more, much harder, because this time we are not going to provide you the raw materials. You are going actually to bring them yourself. Which obviously, if until now they worked 10 hours a day, from now on they had to work 15 hours a day. And obviously, the shlichut, the mission of Moshe Rabbeinu, you can say clearly that ended with a disaster. And if we read carefully the end of Perek Hey, we are in Pasuk Chaf. After Paro increased the decree, Vayifgeu et Moshe bet Aaron nitzavim likratam, some people of Israel met them as they left the palace of Paro. Vayomru aleihem. We can hear the screams. I'm sure they did not talk to them like, you know, like nice people. Yere Hashem alechem v'ishpot. Hashem should see what you did, and he should judge between us and you. אשר יבשתם את ריחנו בעיני פרו ובעיני עבדיו. You actually caused us such a damage because now we lost any reputation with Pharaoh, and actually because of you, you enabled Pharaoh now to kill us. You gave the sword in the hand of Pharaoh to kill us. וישב משה אל השם ויאמר, אדוני, למה ראות על העם הזה? למה זה שלחתן? משה רבינו, you know, he loves בני ישראל, and he reflect upon his mission, and he indeed see that instead of redeeming them, he actually made their life much more miserable. And he end with a complaint to Hashem, ומאז באתי אל פרעה לדבר בשמך. Actually, from the moment you send me to פרעה to redeem בני ישראל, what happened? הרע לעם הזה. והצל לא הצלת את עמך. You did not save them. Actually, the opposite. In our Tanakh, the pasuk ends here, but this is not the last pasuk of Perek. This was Perek A. In Perek Vav, and I hope that you use the presentation. Actually, I could also maybe use the sharing feature. Just wait a second. How am I doing it? Full screen. And share screen. We are here. Share. I hope you can see it now. And slideshow. Okay. Sorry for all of this. Okay, I unfortunately did not put the first pasuk. I started it from Parashat Vayera, but Perek Vav actually starts that after Moshe Rabbeinu complained against what Hashem did to him and the mission that he threw on him so unsuccessful, and it was so unsuccessfully, Hashem said, now wait, and you are going to see what I'm going to do to Pharaoh. And then we start our parsha, וידבר אלוקים אל משה, ואומר לבני השם, ואירע אל אברהם, אל יצחק ואל יעקב, which we start. But actually, if we remember the last pasuk from the last parsha, Hashem told him, now you are going to see what I'm going to do to Pharaoh. First of all, I must say the following. That's very strange, because basically, if the mission, the first mission failed, why Hashem actually sent Moshe Rabbeinu to a mission that was supposed to fail? How you send him to Pharaoh if the end of this mission, Pharaoh is going to increase the decree to be unbearable? Number one. Number two, Hashem said, okay, now you are going to see everything is going to change. And what happened? Vaydaber Moshe ken el bnei Yisrael. Let's read the last pasuk, pasuk tet. Velo Shamuel Moshe. Mikotzer ruach u'me'avodah kasha. And you know what? I fully agree with them. They saw what happened the last time when Moshe Rabbeinu talked to them. Things just got worse. So why should they listen to him now? So what was it that Hashem gave him something that failed actually twice? In order to understand, I think, the hidden story and the secret life of Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim, I want to show you another chapter that I think deserve to be taught here. Just find it here. Sorry. Yeah. I want to go back to a Perek Dalit that I hope you can see here. It's a little bit small, but still.
Can you say it in English, please, so I can follow in the English slide, too?
I can't hear you, sorry.
Oh, I asked you if you could say it in English where you are.
Yes, yes. If you just wait a second.
Okay.
Chapter 4 in Shmot.
I'm chapter 4 in Shmot, and thank in you. The slide is slide number 7. Okay? If you have the slideshow. I think that I shared it now on the screen. Can you see it on your screen?
We can, but it's very, very small. Really, it's you can't
very
really...
small. I'm sorry for that.
But if everybody has a chumash, you can open up to chapter 4.
It's chapter 4, and wait a second. I will do it here, and I hope that now it's going to be a little bit bigger fonts. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe b'Midian, pasuk yutet. It's a 19 verse. Hashem is telling Moshe when he is in Midian. Let's start from pasuk yutet. Sorry, the pasuk before that. Vayelech Moshe. This is after Hashem telling him to go back to Mitzrayim. Vayashov el yeter chutno. You know, apparently he had a wonderful relationship with his father-in-law, and he's not going back to Mitzrayim, although Hashem told him to go to Mitzrayim before he asked permission from his father-in-law. And he tells him, "Vayomer lo el chana, I want to go, ve'ashuba el achai, I want to return back to my brothers, asher b'Mitzrayim, va'ir'e, and I want to see if they are still alive. Because the last time I saw them, they were under a terrible oppression. Vayomer Yitro leMoshe, lech leShalom. And Moshe and Yitro give him the permission to go back to Egypt. You know, I want to talk a little bit about it because I think it's very, very important. And I don't know when we read the Psukim if we pay enough attention to it. When Moshe Rabbeinu came to Midian to his father-in-law, how old he was? I will tell you that the Torah does not tell us, but your educated guess. How old was Moshe Rabbeinu when he arrived to Midian, when he met the daughter of Yitro next to the well, when he became the shepherd of Yitro? What do you think? How old he was?
80. But I
want an educated guess.
40.
Why do you say 40?
Because then he's 80 when he comes back. He spends 40 years out in the desert finding himself, and then he comes back. But 40 years is always a good number.
I agree. It is a good number, or maybe bad if you think about the context of Bnei Israel in the desert. But I would say the following. One number is a given, and we cannot argue. This is the age of 80 when he come in front of Paro for his mission. The 40 years is your speculation, and it's very hard to argue with it, but I think the way I see it, he was much younger. You know why? Because I want to remind you how the story develops. Moshe Rabbeinu went one day, apparently in the age of it says by Igdal Moshe. When does a teenager stop playing video games and start to think about who he is, who are his brothers, what is role in the world? I would say maybe today they say it's 35, but I assume that in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's about 16, 17.
20.
Okay, let's go for 20. And he goes the first day, he's like shocked. He kills an Egyptian within days, as the Torah described. Paro hear about it and he want to kill him. And he run to Midian. And the whole story develops there. So I think 20, to me, it's a better number to assume that the story of Moshe Rabbeinu arrived to Midian is 20. But the one who answered before, she's right. When he came to Paro, he was 80. I want to ask you a question. What happened between 20, 25, okay, 40, until he was 80? Can you tell me what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? I mean, for us, it's one story, but when we just try to work with the numbers, there is a whole black hole here between, I would say, 20, 25, maybe even earlier, or maximum 30, until he was 80 years old. Can anyone here from the listener, we all learned Chumash from a very young age. I'm sure that you heard excellent classes. Please tell me what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu in these few decades.
Did he study with, with Eber and at his academy, his yeshiva for years?
It's a good idea. We know that Yaakov Avinu learned in this yeshiva that existed for a long time. I highly doubt it, because I will tell you one thing that we do know about Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the son-in-law that actually took the responsibilities from the daughters of Yitro, and he shepherded the tzon. We do know that when Hashem revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu, he was a shepherd. And, you know, the only shepherd that actually we know his age. Remember who is the shepherd that we know exactly when he was a shepherd? It was Yosef.
Yosef, 17.
Very good. A month ago, he was 17 years old. This is a good age. It's hard for me to believe that he did it when he was 80 or 79, just before he went to Paro. So what did he do in the yeshiva of Shem Bever? It's very tempting to say that, you know, he was like a Lakewood guy and they went to yeshiva to learn very seriously, but the Torah does not even hint towards this direction. And let me tell you, you know, whenever the Torah does not give us too many details, our sages who had fantastic creative writing skills, they actually try to give us some ideas. If we believe 100% that what they say is true, I don't think that they ever meant that this is exactly what happened in many stories that we find in the Midrash, but they have all kinds of directions. So there are all kinds of Midrashim that say that actually at this time he became a general in a place named Kush, which is apparently Sudan of today. And he actually was a general. He led wars. I don't know even what are the sources of this Midrash. But again, the bears of this Midrash is the difficulty to understand what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu in all these years. The Torah does not tell us anything about it. Any other idea?
Well, wouldn't he have to learn about the history of his people since he was raised in Paro's palace and he left his mother's house at the age of 2 or 3? Then who would have taught him the history of the Jewish people that he should come back and understand their suffering?
I love this answer. And you know what? There is no better way to make a person proud of his Jewishness than learning the Jewish history. My only question is, like, who taught him? There was no other Jew around to teach him that. Because of what we say, that he was an outsider, kind of. I'm sorry?
Maybe Yitro taught.
Maybe. He was Kohen Midian. Apparently, according to Chazal, he was a very educated person. He knew a lot about religions, and maybe he knew something. And listen, the family of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov was very famous in the Middle East. Remember that Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, they all traveled from one place to another, and they left a great impression with this new philosophy of monotheism. So it's possible that maybe there were some people who told him about it. That's quite a good answer. And honestly, I'm not going to come with a clear answer, but I want to try and do what our archaeologists are doing when they find all kind of fragments, sections of stones, and they have to collect them to one structure and to reinvent them again. And I want to do it with what we know from the Tanakh, and I want us to examine the following psukim careful. In Pasuk Yudchet, we saw verse 18, Moshe is about to go to Egypt and he asks Yitro for permission. Let's read now the next Pasuk. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe b'Midyan. Hashem is telling Moshe in Midian, Lech shuv Mitzrayim, go back and return to Egypt. Kimetu kol ha'anashim ha'mevakshim et nafshecha. All the people who died, they are not there anymore. Let me ask you a question. Who are kol ha'anashim ha'mevakshim et nafshecha? All the people who are looking to kill you. Who are they? Who is he talking about?
The Pharaoh.
It's Pharaoh, and it's true. Number one, because the Torah itself is telling us that in these days, Pharaoh died, and the screaming of Israel came to Hashem. So, yes, what will be the difficulty with your explanation?
Kol Anashim is more than one.
Kol Anashim is more than one. Very, very good. And I would say that since the Torah already revealed the fact that Paro died, if indeed it was Paro, then Hashem should tell him, Paro, who is the source of authority, died, and you can go back. But you are not wrong, because the Ibn Ezra, for example, say that obviously Paro was not hunting himself. Moshe Rabbeinu, he sent many other people. And right now, once Paro died, you know, these people lost their source of authority, and it considered like they died too. You don't have to worry anymore. So I'm not dismissing what you said. Actually, the Ibn Ezra say this idea, but I want to draw your attention that it might be other people. And now we are talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. He's now go back to Mitzrayim. We do know that he's 80 years old. And now he's going back to Egypt.
Was it the witnesses that saw him killing the Mitzri?
Maybe, although it looks from the Torah, I must say that's a very good answer. There were many witnesses who wanted to kill him. He was breaking the laws of Egypt. It's all possible, but maybe you mean when you say the witness that you talk about the Egyptians or about the Jews?
The Egyptians that saw him killing the Mitzri.
Okay. I want to suggest a new idea, and I would be very, very afraid to do so if I wouldn't read the modern history of Zionism 100 years ago. I have to tell you, like when I read now the Psukim of Shmot, the best commentary I can offer you is not Rashi or the Ramban or the Ibn Ezra. I highly recommend to everyone here to read the diaries of Theodor Herzl, because the only person who managed to create a movement from exile to Eretz Israel after Moshe Rabbeinu was Theodor Herzl. Well, I'm not saying that he was a great rabbi like Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't know if Moshe Rabbeinu at this point was such a great rabbi. But if you want to understand the political difficulties of a leader who have to create a movement of a nation from one place to another, you read Jabotinsky, you read Herzl, and I'm telling you, you get a completely new vision and a very true one about what happened in Yetziat Mitzrayim. And I'm going to explain it in a second. Remember what happened then when Moshe Rabbeinu come to Paro and he tells him that he want to redeem the Jewish people. It ended with disaster. We just read about it. And we saw that the opposition to Moshe Rabbeinu was one, Paro himself, who apparently was under fear that Bnei Israel are going to rebel. And remember, that's how Sefer Shmot started. The whole oppression started because they were afraid of them. And now comes this crazy guy, and he suggests that he's going to redeem the Jewish people. That's exactly what they were so afraid of. This was a nation built upon slavery. And now he comes and he tells him that he wants to take them away. So Paro was one obstacle. But as we saw before, the second obstacle came from within the Jewish people themselves. This was shaking everything that they knew already for decades, about 120 years. They were afraid that Moshe and Aaron will not be able to redeem a nation of slaves from the most powerful empire of the day. And only tzores are going to result from this mission. If it happened once. And indeed, I think that what happened here was, and Chachamim are telling us about Datan va'Aviram, they are not mentioned here, but the Torah just told us, Vayetzu anashim nitzavim, people came and they stood there. And I can assure you 100%, they were with plagues or maybe with stones, and they screamed and they opposed everything that Moshe and Aaron did. Very strongly. They were afraid about their family. I don't blame them. But people are afraid from people, even from redeemers. They might, if they fail, it might end with a disaster. And listen, if you go to Jewish history, if you go to people like Bar Kokhba, the people who tried to fought the Romans, how did it end? Very, very bad. And the people who were in Mitzrayim at the time might be afraid of a person like Moshe Rabbeinu, that the whole thing is going to end up with disaster, and it happened once, because Paro increased the decrees and made their life unbearable. And I do believe strongly that what happened is the following. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was young, he went to Egypt. And when he was still young, Hashem told him, go back to Mitzrayim. In Pasuk Yudchet, we hear what happened then. Vayelech Moshe vayashov el yeter chotno. He's going to his father-in-law and ask for permission. We have to stop here and to imagine what is happened next. Moshe Rabbeinu indeed went to Mitzrayim. He went to Mitzrayim not only to fail, but fleeing away for his life, not only from Paro, but from his own people. As I said before, you should know, Herzl, in our collective memory, the hero, at the time that he started his movement, he found an opposition from what I call Datan va'Aviram. You know what is Datan va'Aviram? I'll tell you, because I think that that's exactly what happened to the Zionist movement in the beginning. Aviram in Hebrew means Aviram. My father is important. The elite, the high echelon of people, politically, religiously, dynasty. They say, who are you? Like, you are going to shake the whole fabric of society. I am in a high place. I was a leader until now. And maybe, by the way, that's exactly how Reuven and Shimon felt when Moshe Rabbeinu arrived. You tried to shake the whole structure of leadership here. Who are you? The second one is Datan. Datan, until this very day, Dati means the religious one, the conservative one, the one who keeps the laws and the traditions. And they also were very afraid. Redemption means not only moving from one place to another, it's many, many times changing traditions, changing culture, becoming a new person. think about Medinat Israel today. What happened to the people? Like, all the Zionist movement was a try to take people who were bound to the galut, to the exile, and to make a new Jew. Coming to Eretz Israel, they are going to work the land, they are going to fight, they are going to build the land, they are going to create their own culture. This was a big dream. And many, many people, as we all know, from the high echelons of society on one hand, and the rabbis, the datan, the dati, on the other hand, put many obstacles in the way of Nordau and Herzl for many, many reasons. I have this strong feeling that Moshe Rabbeinu faced exactly the same opposition from the people of Reuven, of Shimon, maybe Yehuda, all the important guys, the big shots. He came from the outside, as someone here said, and very rightfully so. And the other one was the people who sought or tried to keep the old traditions. You know, they fought for their tradition in very harsh time in Egypt. And they did not know if this is not going to just collapse when Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron and the Jewish people again and Paro are going to fight against each other. This was very dangerous. And they were the opposition to Moshe Rabbeinu. At this point, happened apparently something that happened later in the desert. Hashem had a plan. Hashem had a plan to take Bnei Israel from Mitzrayim, to bring them to Eretz Israel within few months. But this plan failed. And it failed because of a lack of cooperation with the nation. You cannot redeem people against their will. They have to be mentally ready for redemption. And indeed, plans changed. For 38 years, nothing is happening. You know that the Torah from Sefer Shmot until Sefer Dvarim, between Sefer Bamidbar in the second year in the desert until they are about to cross the Jordan and they have few words, for 38 years, there is nothing happening. Bnei Israel are wandering in the desert, no connection to Hashem, they don't see the land. This explains what happened, the anger that was accumulated within the people in the Midbar. But this generation was not ready for redemption. They had to die in the Midbar. And it's very, very possible that the years between 20 or 30 until 80 were exactly the first version of what happened later in the Midbar. The Jews in Egypt were not ready for the Geula. Pasuk Yutet here, the 19th version, might reveal this fact. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe b'Midian lech shuv Mitzrayim. Hashem is telling Moshe in Midian, go back to Mitzrayim. Wait a second. This is exactly what I read before. Hashem already told Moshe Rabbeinu to go to redeem the people in Mitzrayim. What this pasuk is telling me? Lech shuv Mitzrayim. And what is lech shuv Mitzrayim? Go again to Mitzrayim. You can understand this pasuk 50 years later, when Moshe Rabbeinu was close to the age of 80, and Hashem is telling him, go back the this generation, the new generation, is ready for redemption. Ki metu kol ha'anashim ha'mevakshim et nafshecha. The internal opposition, the people who oppose this idea of redemption, they die. These generations die. It's a young generation. You will be able to lead them back to Eretz Israel. Well, the Torah does not tell us this. But this is not a big problem for me. I don't know what you think about Bnei Israel in Mitzrayim. Because the Torah does not tell us exactly what was their spiritual situation. But we do know, if we read the book of Yechezkel, that things were not so great. And I want to read together with you, I will try to translate it, a very, very important chapter in the Tanakh that unfortunately many people are not aware of it, that describe exactly what was the spiritual situation in Mitzrayim at the time of redemption. We all know the famous Midrash of Chazal that Bnei Israel were in the 49th gate of Tumah, and only in the last minute Hashem redeemed them. Now, this Midrash is not Midrash. It's explicit verse in Yechezkel. I want to read it with you. Yechezkel chapter 20. Hashem tells Yechezkel at the time that he wants him to remind the people the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. I raised my hand to promise, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I'm your God. Verse 6. In this very day, I raised my hand with a promise to take them out of Mitzrayim, to redeem them. El Eretz Asher Tarti Lahem, to a land that I choose for them, zavat chalav udvash, full and flowing milk and honey, tzvihi lechol haratzot, she's praised more than any other country or land. But listen to the following pasuk. Va'omar aleihem, Hashem said, I told them in Mitzrayim, ish, every one of you, shikutzei einav hashlichu, throw away your idols, ubegilulei Mitzrayim al titamau, and don't worship the idols of the Egyptians. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I'm your God. Don't worship idols and avodah zarah. Vayamru bi, and they rebelled against me. Velo avu lishmo elai, and they didn't want to listen to me. Ish, every one of them, et shikutzei einehem lo yishlichu, this idol, little figurine that they worshipped, and they were always in front of their eyes, they did not throw away. Ve'et gilulei Mitzrayim lo azavu, and they never left, and they never dismissed the idols of the Egyptians. Va'omar lishpoch hamati aleihem. And Hashem actually decided that he is going to destroy this nation in Mitzrayim. Lechalot api baem, betoch Eretz Mitzrayim. When they were in Eretz Mitzrayim, Hashem actually wanted to kill them. You never heard this story. We never tell this story. And I'll tell you why. Because the next pasuk. Va'as leman shmi. You know why I took them out of Mitzrayim? Because of my great name. I did not want to desecrate my name in front of the other nations. Asher nodati aleihem leineihem leotziam eretz Mitzrayim. The Israel did not worth it, according to the psukim here in Yechezkel. Now, you know where Yechezkel took this idea from? I will tell you exactly. When the pasuk says here, Vayamrubi, they rebelled against me. Velo avu lishmoa elai. Do you remember this psukim from Shmot? Velo avu, they didn't want to listen to me. Where did this story actually take place? We never heard it in Shmot, didn't it? So what is this psukim are talking about? But do you remember the pasuk that said, Velo shamu el Moshe, מקוצר רוח ומעבודה קשה. What did that mean? ולא שמעו אל משה מקוצר רוח ומעבודה קשה. Chazal are telling us that the עבודה קשה is עבודה זרה. בני ישראל, and this is the real truth and the secret that is buried in the Torah and was revealed only by Yechezkel, is that בני ישראל did not listen to Moshe Rabbeinu because they were so assimilated into the culture of Mitzrayim, they did not want to live anymore. And we have to appreciate it, that many societies, once they mingle into the new society, they lose their identity. And Bnei Israel were very, very close to it. We hear it from no other than the Navi Yechezkel, telling us the truth about our own history. And the Torah, I would say Hashem is a little bit ashamed by it. The same as Sefer Shmot does not mention a word about it, the same, we don't know about this time between, let's say, 20 to 80 years of the life of Moshe, why he had to go back to Midian and to stay there. The answer is because he could not redeem Israel in all these years, because they were not ready for this. They were people who resisted the leadership of Moshe and they tried to take them out of Mitzrayim. And not for no reason. As you mentioned, Moshe was an outsider. Moshe grew up somewhere else. He was not part of the family. This was his main concern. When Hashem told him, go to Bnei Israel and tell them that I want to take them out of Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't. They will not listen to me. Why should they listen? I did not suffer like them. I was not there. I'm like an outsider. Why should they take my words that you want to take them back to Eretz Israel? And we see that he was right. They were not ready to it. The plan of Hashem was that once Moshe Rabbeinu will come with a great confidence, Bnei Israel somehow will listen and will go out. What happened in front of Paro is a different story. We don't have to, we don't have enough time to expand upon it, because if you read what Hashem told him to tell Paro and what at the end he told Paro is quite different. It showed that Moshe Rabbeinu himself did not have the confidence that he's able to redeem Bnei Israel, but this is a whole shiur for itself. And in order to finish the shiur on time, I would say the following. Now we can understand why it was so important to the Torah to talk about the yichus of Moshe Rabbeinu, and why the Torah omitted completely the story about his sister, about growing up in in the palace of Paro. The Torah want to tell us that the second time, Moshe Rabbeinu was already insider. He did not come from the outside. He did not raise the opposition that happened on the first time. At the second time, he was part of the family. This time, people listened to him. This time, they knew exactly what family he came from, and they accepted him as part of the family, a person who is worthy to tell them about the redemption that is supposed to come. Why Reuven and Shimon? I don't have time to elaborate about it, but I will leave it to you for Shiurei Bayit, for homework. I think about the following idea. If you read the chapters from Perek Aleph, from the first one to Perek Zayin, you are going to see many, many times words like Vayomer Hashem, Ra'o ra'iti etoni ami asher b'mitzrayim, ve'et zakatam shamati, I heard their cry. Then Hashem is telling him, go to them and tell them, Elokei avotechem nira elai, God appeared to me, I saw him. Veshamu lekolecha. The use of the word of seeing, ra'o ra'iti, nira elai, shamati, shamu lekolecha, or Moshe Rabbeinu argue, Bayan Moshe Rabbeinu, ben lo yaminu li, ven lo yishmeu bekuli. They are not going to listen to me. Ki omru, ki lo nira elecha Hashem. These are maybe four places out of at least 15 that you are going to find again and again. These two verbs of re'iya and shmiya, which must take us to the place where we find this idea of re'iya and shmiya, and who are the tribe that are named after seeing and listening?
Reuben and Shimon.
Excellent.
Nice.
If you see here, Batar Leah Batelet Ben Batikra Shmo Reuben Ki Amra Ki Ra'a Hashem Be'oni. The same words. Read the psukim in Shmot. Vayomer Hashem Ra'o Ra'iti Et Oni Ami. The same words. Or, for example, with Shimon, Vatomer Ki Shama Hashem Ki Snua Anochi. What happened in Mitzrayim? Bet Zakatam Shamati Mipnei Noksa, from his enemies. And what happened then? Hashem comes back to redeem the Jewish people. Vatarot Batelet Ben, Vatomer Apam Yilave Ishi Elai. This time, my husband is going to join me. So this is a beautiful, beautiful precursor to see also the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Israel. Ra'a Hashem Be'oni, Vayar Hashem Be'onyam, Ki Shama Hashem Ki Snua Ani Shimon. And then, and only then, Hashem joining them and redeem them from Mitzrayim. I want to thank everyone for your listening. There is so much to talk about it. I will just summarize it in two sentences. What we saw today is that actually there is a hidden history. All this year that Moshe Rabbeinu, between about being 20 and being 80, that we don't know what happened, but we, as I suggested, he had to leave Mitzrayim, not only from the external opposition of Paro, but maybe from his own people who did not want to be redeemed. Only when he was ready, the nation was ready, then Moshe Rabbeinu goes again, this time redeeming them from Mitzrayim. Again, I want to thank everyone. I want to thank Rabbi Kilman for giving me the opportunity. I apologize that I did not have enough time to prepare more than that. But thank you for your listening, your answers. Shabbat shalom to everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you. Before Yashok, thank you. I don't know if anybody has any questions, you know, quickly. I'll discuss my comments with you in school tomorrow. But if anybody has any comments, really, Vakasha, quickly.
Okay, the Yecheskel part, is that is the Midrash where Moses says to God, if you kill the people, the nations will say that you're weak and not really God. Is that Midrash based on Yecheskel or on Shmot?
Number one, we don't have to go to the Midrash. Actually, this discussion between Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem took place few times when Hashem wanted to punish the people. And Moshe Rabbeinu say to him, listen, that's what the Kriyat HaTorah, the famous Kriyat HaTorah that we read every fast, that Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu say, listen, it's not about us, it's about you, like what the people are going to say about your strength. So this is not a Midrash. These are the psukim. This is actually the ace of the argument that Moshe Rabbeinu always take from, you know, from the sleeve, like it's a winning card. It's not about us. You can kill us, but then what the nations are going to say about you. And indeed, Moshe Rabbeinu used it, and Yechezkel used it also. He tells Hashem, and by the way, later on, Ezra is using the same thing. You can do to us whatever you want, but what will happen to you? Okay?
Okay,
very thought-provoking. Thank you.
I just want to know when the whole discussion between God and Moshe takes place, the whole argument back and forth. Is that the first time he goes or the second time he goes?
Okay, so I will summarize it the following way. You see, I actually prepared most of the shiur on this one. What we see here, that actually Moshe Rabbeinu was inaugurated twice. The first time was in the Sneh, and this was when Moshe Rabbeinu was a very young person. Right after he left Mitzrayim, I assume that he was in his 20 or so. And then we have another inauguration that I spoke today. And this happened when he was 79, just before he came to Paro. Now, more than that, if you compare the two prakim, you are going to see that they awfully repeating themselves. Like it's almost the same, to the point that indeed some of the Mefarshim say, yeah, you know what, like, actually, Perek Vav is a repetition of Perek Bet. because they look so much the same. The arguments are the same. The answer of Moshe of Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'll give you Aaron, are the same. But if you indeed read carefully, you are going to see that the two inaugurations were for two different purposes. The first one was for Bnei Israel. Hashem expected Moshe Rabbeinu to go and Bnei Israel to raise to the occasion and to say, yes, we are going to leave Mitzrayim. We are going to rebel. We trust Hashem. This did not happen. The second inauguration, when he was much older, was for a different purpose. It was to go to Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Because there was no need anymore to encourage the people. The people now were ready. 60 years too late, they were ready to leave. But there was another problem. The problem of the new Paro. And for this, Hashem had to tell him, okay, I see your concern. You are not a great diplomat. Beforehand, he said, I'm not going to inspire them. I'm an outsider. And he said, okay, let's take Aaron because Aaron is insider. But the second time in Perek Vav, he sent him to Paro because this was a political mission. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm not a politician. I cannot go back to Paro and to redeem Bnei Israel. So Hashem told him again, even for this, for the political mission, go with Aaron. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, and especially
Shabbat Shalom.
For those who came late, I really want to thank an extra thank you for Rabbi Gmar, because he really did this on very little notice because we had a last minute change in scheduling. So I really want to thank him. And thank you, Rabbi. And Bakasha, we look forward to learning with you in the future. Less than 12 hours is my shir on the Siddur tomorrow morning, 9:30. We'll be doing Azyashir, finishing up Azyashir, finishing up, you know, Psukah de Zimra. Everybody's welcome. Sunday, of course, Rabbi Liebtag kicks off the week as usual. Mark Shapiro is back this week after a few week hiatus. And also Dr. Lindsay Guhartz will be starting her series on Judaism and Christianity, a tangled history. She did, of course, a series last year on Judaism and Islam. So now we're going to move to Judaism and Christianity. So that's Wednesday, I believe, at 1 p.m. And then all our other regular shiurim we've had a week will be, we'll have next week also, of course, please God. And next Thursday night, Dr. Rebecca Winter, who is a student of Rabbi Gemara, many years ago, will be giving this year. She's now living in Atlanta. She has spoken for us before, and you'll remember, but that's so next Thursday night, Dr. Winter Rebecca will be speaking, and we look forward to seeing you soon. And as always, please invite a friend, and we look forward to learning with you for many opportunities here at Torah in Motion. Bakasha, Laila Tov, and Shabbat Shalom, everybody. Be well. We hope to see you soon.
And Chodesh Tov.
Chodesh Tov. Well, that's a few days later. After Shabbos, we can do Shabbos and Vara. We hope you'll be here for learning many times before Rosh Chodesh. So we'll have an opportunity to say Chodesh Tov then. Okay, but yes, thank you. Chodesh Tov. But so, and once we're at it, Happy New Year, I guess. I don't know, all of January, you're allowed to say Happy New Year. I still pee-pee if they wish you Happy 2023. So good, a good Chodesh, a good week, a good day, everything. Thank you, Defi. Okay. All the best, everybody. Laila Tov.
Thank you. It's a great
Okay, thank you.
Teacher, thank you.